snow and rain, and it was cold, and I had my 21st birthday. And our sergeant, he was reading a letter from his wife saying, you got a baby daughter. And a whiz bang came over and blew him to smithereens, and I was sitting in the opposite in the dugout. I'll never forget that. And I had my 21st birthday there on Gallipoli. I often think of that, this fellow, one of the nicest fellows you could wish to meet, you know.
Cold blows the wind upon my true love. Soft falls the gentle rain. I
We'd had a very big fall of snow there in the November, you know. It was the first snow that most Australians had ever seen. And we had a very heavy fall of snow, the whole thing blanketed in snow. But then that snow had melted by the time the evacuation took place.
But I think the greatest thing, which they don't seem to understand, a lot of people, the greatest thing was the withdrawal or the evacuation.
You know, Lord Kitchener came out to Gallipoli to say whether the evacuation should be carried out or not. Well, he came out in November, the OK was given, and it was all kept secret.
He conferred with the staff, and he held that in the winter, with the advent of the colder weather, and the men were in such poor condition, that it wouldn't be advisable for them to have a big major attack.
The troops weren't told about the evacuation until pretty late, you know. They weren't told long in advance.
I had an idea that there was something going to happen. And I used to pick up the mail. I used to have to go down to our brigade headquarters to pick up the mail. And the sergeant said to me, he said, you better not come the next 2 or 3 days, Park. There'll be no mail.
General Birdwood came up to the beach one day and I was down there. He said, I'll have you out of this soon, boys. And 3 weeks later, we started to evacuate.
About Christmas. I remember I received a beautiful Christmas cake from my friend who I later married, and we just sat around just before we went down to the beach and enjoyed this beautiful Christmas cake.
We worked what was called by the soldiers and everybody, the silent stunt. The idea being, we went completely silent, we threw no bombs, we fired no rifles, completely silent for 2 or 3 days. This was all part of the scheme for the evacuation.
Well, the idea of the silent stunt, we didn't know at first what it was. We got word. On such and such a day, at such and such a time, no shots would be fired unless it was in self-defense. Now that would last for 24 hours. then there'd be a few more days, out would go. And then they decide on another silent day. Right, oh, this silent day had come for 24 hours, same thing again. Then a week afterwards, they turn around and they decide on 2 days. And that'd go on with a break in between, till eventually it got to 3 days. And then they worked it back to 2 days. And it was just a bamble, Johnny Turk, wondering what the devil was going on. We didn't actually know till the day of the evacuation of what was taking place. And that was the idea of the silent business, for us to do the evacuation.
It was remarkable. And when the night came for the evacuation, which of course you wasn't allowed to talk, you wasn't allowed to light a cigarette, it was a most remarkable feat.
I was given a party to take down from Quinn's Post down to the beach, and I was given a timetable. I had to pass certain place at a certain time, leave at a certain time, then go past a checking post at a certain time, and eventually get down to the beach. We were issued with spare putties and things to wrap around our boots so the Turks wouldn't hear the measured tread of troops on the move.
We walked down to the beach that night with socks over our boots, dead in the sand.
Once we started to go, and going down from Quinn's Post down to the beach, I remember my personal feeling was, once my back was turned to the Turks, that I wanted to run. I think we did that journey from Quinn's Post down to the beach in much quicker time than was allotted to us. We thought we'd be very lucky if we got away. The Turks didn't attack us while we were getting away. And they didn't, of course, as you know.
According to the brass, they reckoned the casualties were just as likely to be as high as what the landing was. Well, whoever the engineers, whoever done it, was absolutely, it was a genius.
The evacuation was beautifully executed. A lot of luck in getting away with it without one casualty. There wasn't one man injured on the evacuation.
Well, I think that it was the finest bit of staff work of the whole campaign. They had everything timed to the minute, and they knew exactly how long to the second that it took us to walk from the front line down. It was really a classic exhibition of organisation.
It was organised to an extent. They still had rifle fire, and there was no one there to fire them. It was done by water. Engineering feat it was. They had the triggers tied with string or wire or something. Water would drip on it, fire a shot. And it went most remarkable.
There's one bunch of our fellas had to play a game of either football or cricket. My memory doesn't serve me, but they had to play a game in full view of the Turks. And the Turks sent a shrapnel shell over, scared them, you know, and they run away. The idea was to deceive the Turks that we were still there and still active and there were still people there. Although, you know, gradually our fellows went away in the barges onto the other ships and during the night time.
And when we got down onto Anzac Beach, we got onto the pier there. There was a temporary sort of pier had been built to run the barges alongside. And on that pier, I remember, they had layers of unused sandbags, empty sandbags, so as they wouldn't hear the men's feet on the pier.
It was a barge with a square centre hole. We went down there with the equipment on, walked down the we call a fiddly ladder, as the sailors call it, went to sleep down there, and when they woke us up, we went aboard a ship. I knew it was a naval ship by the Tommy, the British, the HMS, no names, just HMS on it. But I said, what's the name of this one? He said, this is the flagship. I suppose he was told to tell me that. He could have said the hard ship, I'd have believed him.
And when we went down early morning, the last point, well, I was met down on the beach with a couple of my pals who had total abstainers. We were all young in those days. And my two pal, two Franklin boys, they had never touched a rummy, the only rummy shoe we ever got on Gallipoli. And they gave me theirs, and that's why I become a little bit addicted to rum. And these two boys were selected to break up all the rum jars on the beach and pour it into the beach on Anzac. And I can remember vividly the beautiful blue water of the Mediterranean being brown with this rum that they'd been poured into the beach. And they said to me, they threw their arms around my neck, they'd be sampling one of these jars. They said, Harry, come and break a couple of these jars with us. So, of course, I had to go and help them break a couple of these jars, and we sampled the contents. And all the time, the boys in the metal bars were yelling out to us, come on, you blighters, if you don't soon come with us, we'll leave you behind. So they had to practically come and drag us into the barge to take us off Gallipoli. And that's the way we went off Gallipoli.
There was a little poem they had. What gone? The Australians gone from Anzac gone. Where for 8 long months they lived with fear. They dined with disease. Till every 1 and 2 was shot. And 4 out of every 8 lay dead. Yes, gone from Anzac gone and left behind more than 8,000 graves.